And welcome again to Brewcrew Online. I am Benjamin Orr.
I'm Colin Bennett.
And boy, we missed all of you guys. It's been quite a month. The world didn't end. The Brewers actually signed people. And the Hall of Fame allowed nobody in. So what a month it's been indeed.
Yeah, it's been some kind of break for us, that's for sure.
Yeah, we all survived the holidays. Nobody exploded from, you know, all the sweets and everything else, so we're good to go for right now. First things first, got to talk about the Brewers, obviously, and what they've done in the offseason. About a week after our last show, they inked Tom Gorzolani, former Nationals reliever, and then they also got another Nationals reliever in Mike Gonzalez. So the Brewers are now in a better position with guys like Burke Badenhop and Mike Gonzalez and Tom Gorzolani than they were 2 months ago.
Yeah, what really happened was we built ourselves a bullpen from scratch, and it's a bullpen with experience, a bullpen that's not inclined to walk batters, and it's one that actually looks pretty good now.
Yeah, plus the fact that you have Gorzolani and Gonzalez that are both left-handed relievers. So, I mean, we had that in Cameron Lowe, but, you know, it wasn't great. But, you know, it was still something that we needed because we looked at our bullpen, we looked at our rotation, and all we had left-handed-wise was Chris Murphyson. And we needed somebody else, and we got two of them. I would have liked to seen us get J.P. Howell, but he went to the Dodgers. It would have been nice to get him, but, you know, you take what you can get.
The Dodgers can't get everything.
The Dodgers are just going to, like, that bank's going to explode someday. I just... Signing way too many people want...
Because Magic Johnson,
because people try to think that, you know, money buys championships, and it doesn't. We've seen before how it falls on people's faces. You know, you look at the Phillies when they were supposed to be in the World Series and weren't even in the playoffs. You look at the Red Sox when they, you know, got Crawford and Gonzalez, and that didn't happen. So, I mean, I don't know why they think that the Dodgers are going to be this huge team because of all the people they signed. It never works out.
Unless you're the Yankees.
Yeah, even then, it's just... I think the team, though, that really is scary is actually the Blue Jays, and not just the fact that they got R.A. Dickey and the people from the Marlins. I think the fact that they still have people to play with in the minor leagues and still trade for people, that's what's scary about, I think, the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah, very, very few teams other than the Blue Jays have ever been able to take advantage of the climate of baseball the way that that team has. It's pretty impressive to be able to just jump on a situation the way that they did, and I mean, really just hoard players. And I thought 2-3 years ago, they had the roster on paper to really make something happen. And last year you could see, I mean, I didn't get to see that much of them here in the Midwest, but, watching them play the Brewers, you see that roster and you know that, I mean, they're almost there right now. They're playing in a really tough division, but that team was almost ready to go, you know, to the playoffs that year. And now, I mean, they took a good look at what they need and, I mean, they got a whole bunch for her very, very little, and it's going to be really interesting to see how it all works. Personally, I'm not 100% on board. I think if those players couldn't play together as Marlins, it's going to be hard for them to play together as Blue Jays. But, I mean, you add them to, you know, Joey Bats and Encarnacion, and I think you got... I mean, you've got a hell of a team right there.
Yeah, and, you know, you look at the past seasons when the Blue Jays finished, I think, 81 and 81. They were kind of on that cusp of, you know, getting, you know, up there towards the playoffs. And, I mean, it's not inconceivable to think that they could be in the playoffs in 2013. I mean, it's really something that's interesting because you have now a division that really has all five teams being contenders. And nowhere else in baseball do you have that. I think it's interesting what the AL East is going to show us this season. But don't know. I just feel like the Blue Jays are one of these teams, kind of like the Angels in a sense, and not just because the addition of Josh Hamilton to the Angels, but I just feel like they have this potential to actually get there. Because also you look at LA with the addition of Hamilton, you still have Albert Pujols, you have Mike Trout, you have Mark Trumbo, you have Howie Kendrick. And then pitching-wise, you have now the addition of Jason Vargas alongside, you know, Jared Weaver and C.J. Wilson and the young Garrett Richards. You have a really good rotation there, and Tommy Hansen, who they got in a trade. So I think the teams like the Angels and the Blue Jays really pose a huge threat in the AL.
Well, I would agree with you, but I would think that there are caveats to every team, obviously, and the question is going to be how big is that? Because in the Angels, you have slow starters up and down, you know, that lineup. Mike Trout being probably the only exception. You have someone that couldn't put it together all season in every part of that lineup. You know, and maybe I'll throw Josh Hamilton in there as a model of consistency as well. But, I mean, Mark Trumbo started out fantastic last year and then didn't do awful. I don't know if it was the fact that Mike Trout continued to be fantastic or if if he literally slid back, but you stopped hearing about Trumbo, you know, I don't know, June? Albert Pujols didn't show up until June. you have that to kind of worry about. C.J. Wilson did well, but wasn't the pitcher they helped put together a quarter of a billion-dollar package for. So you have that to worry about there with the Angels. And then in, you know, the AL East, the Blue Jays are one of the best-looking teams on paper right now, but there's a reason that we don't play baseball on paper. And you have teams like the Red Sox are still completely in disarray. A new coaching staff changes nothing for me. In terms of how they're going to do. The Yankees' combined age is about 2,050 years old at this point.
I wrote an article, just real quick, about when they signed Euclid or whatever. That they need somebody on this team that isn't applying for their ARP card.
Right. and they need to get young in a hurry. Yeah. Because they're going to bank on people like Granderson being, you know, the core of that team. They can't make him the core of the team at 32.
No, especially when basically Granderson is the speedy version of Adam Dunn.
Right.
He struck out way more than anybody anticipated in 2012. So it's kind of, you know, the Yankees are really in a very tough situation. And it's really tough on them. And this is weird, people giving sympathy to the Yankees. Which I don't even think it's sympathy. I think it's a lot of people just saying, you know, it was bound to happen. Because the biggest thing the Yankees are trying to do is they're trying to avoid that luxury tax. So they're trying to get under that $189 million payroll. And by doing that, you know, Swisher was gone. After this season, they don't even know if they can contain Robinson Cano because of how much he might ask. So, right. You know, the Yankees, like you said, are banking on a lot of okay talent at an older age, and that's something that isn't really great for them. They don't have that great of a farm system, so they might be in some rough waters for a few years.
Right.
But
I hate to say it, but George Steinbrenner was not an idiot.
No.
He didn't care about the luxury tax as long as if he hit it, he also made the playoffs. He didn't really spend money on terrible ball players.
No, he also got wiser about it as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I'm not saying the A-Rod thing is wise by any stretch of the imagination, but you look beyond that, and some of the guys he signed, you know, before, you know, his passing, you know, he got CeCe Sabathia, he got Mark Teixeira, who have turned out to be really good for the team. He didn't go out and have to get another A-Rod and almost use $200 million for one guy, because the Yankees are feeling those effects until, I think, 2017.
Right.
And that's a really long time to have a player like that. Because
it's good for an awful long time.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just, that's why so many teams, especially when we talk about the Brewers, were so leery about these multi-year contracts, especially when it comes to, like, pitchers.
Right.
Because they get an injury. You look at, you know, I have to use the Yankees, for example, because they're the first one that pops into my head. When they signed Carl Pavano a few years ago, you know, he hardly even pitched. And then they traded for Michael Pineda from the Mariners, and he didn't pitch. He had Tommy John, and he's out till about June of this year. So, you know, that's where I think, going back to the Brewers now, I kind of understood what Doug Melvin was doing when he didn't sign anybody, you know, 3 years or more, the whole thing with Ryan Dempster. I understand that. And, you know, I don't even know if we really needed another starter. I think with the bullpen we have now, I feel comfortable enough with it. I think, you know, it gives us enough leeway to put Peralta in a starting position and Estrada and Fires into the starting roles, and maybe toy around with the idea of Chris Narvison and Mark Rogers and Tyler Thornburg. And then you still have Jim Henderson and Brandon Kinsler for the bullpen alongside Burke Badenhop, Gorzolani, and Mike Gonzalez and Axford. I think the Brewers did themselves well by providing themselves enough cushion to fall on just in case they have a bad apple somewhere.
Yeah, and I'll tell you the way I see it, and I agree with most of what you said there. I think, personally, right off the bat, I don't see a huge difference between a two-year and a three-year deal with most of the guys we were talking about. Because you look at, like, Randy Wolf's contract. Randy Wolf had a three-year deal, right?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, and he fell apart on his third year. But he was also in his 40s at that time. So I don't really think that's the same conversation as signing Edwin Jackson to a three-year deal.
Randy Wolf was in his 40s?
I believe so, yeah.
He's only 36.
Really?
Yeah.
How did I get that wrong? I'm usually only half wrong on those things.
I know he has a brother. Maybe, I don't know. I mean,
I don't know where I was. I don't know what I was thinking with that. But the point being, when you make older signings, you're obviously going to have an issue. And Randy Wolf, to me, was never a signing that I would think, like, oh my god, I can't believe we got him for 3 years. Same thing with Jeff Suppan. When they made the signing for Jeff Suppan, I think everyone in the baseball world kind of was like, whatever. Like,
yeah.
Nobody saw Jeff Suppan being the guy to fix this rotation, you know?
Yeah, you look at also guys like David Riske and stuff like that, and you're just like,
right.
Okay, like, we have them. How does this help us in the long term?
I think the Brewers front office, to some degree, I mean, looking at those numbers, obviously you see three-year deal. One good year, maybe four good starts, and then one and a half good years for Randy Wolf. And you say, obviously, when we make three-year signings, we get burned. Which is true, but it's not necessarily the fact that you signed them for 3 years more than it is you signed David Riske, Jeff Suppan, and Randy Wolf. So you have that. I mean, you can't confuse. You really shouldn't confuse those two things. But I think we made good signings this year. I think we looked at what we actually needed. The areas of the bullpen that needed to be fixed, not just the bullpen as a whole, but we needed to cut down on walks. We needed to be able to strand more base runners. We needed pitchers that can pitch well without outstanding defense behind them. And I think they found those guys.
Yeah.
And that's the most important thing coming out of that, is that I think it showed a level of strategy that I don't think Milwaukee has generally been as overt about in the past couple seasons.
I'll tell you right now, the things I like about the two signings between Gorzolani and Gonzalez, the things I really like about this, is that they both came from the Nationals. a very pitcher-heavy team that specializes in with guys on base when the pitcher comes into the game, cutting down on walks, like you said, and just being able to pitch under pressure and do it constantly. Something that I think if John Axford sees this going on, we'll see the John Axford of 2011 again. 46 saves, I believe. We can have that again.
Yeah.
It's just all a domino effect. One guy sees another guy do something, hopefully good, and it all just falls into place.
Because to me, then, the big question mark is going to be Jim Henderson. If you're looking at bullpen, you're looking at Burt Badenhop, Mike Gonzalez, Tom Gorzolani, Brandon Kinsler, probably, Jim Henderson, and John Axford. Who is the sore thumb there? I say that it's Jim Henderson. Because everyone was huge on him when he came in because, I mean, they could have brought out a broomstick with a Brewers hat on it, and we would have said he's the greatest reliever to come through our system in years because he wasn't Cameron Lowe and he wasn't anyone else on that bullpen. But really, looking at his numbers, he was a little inconsistent. And, I mean, he really didn't show anything phenomenal during his time in the season.
No, and the thing that kind of concerned me regarding Jim Henderson was the fact that it took him so long to get finally into the majors. I mean, he's 30 years old now and just made his debut in 2012. So that kind of concerns me when a pitcher's down there that long. Obviously, right. It means they have issues with their control and their command. But, I mean, yeah, he had his struggles, but who in the bullpen didn't? But he was still competent enough. I think a 3.53 ERA, I believe that's what he had. A few saves thrown in there. And he made for a hell of a lot better setup man than Francisco Rodriguez did.
True.
And I don't know if you put him in that same role again, because when you start assigning roles in a bullpen, that's when it starts to fall apart. Maybe you try out that. I mean, because you look at what Ron Renneke did, was he didn't come out and say that Axford wasn't the closer. He said, you know, there's a committee. But we all still knew Axford was the closer. I mean, it was one of those things you just know. And maybe you do that same thing again this year with a newer bullpen that, you know, they haven't pitched in Milwaukee before. They haven't really pitched as a team before. I mean, you have Burt Badenhop from the Rays. You have two guys from the Nationals and two guys from the Brewers who all now have to merge together as one team. Well, three guys from the Brewers, but two of them really from the minors, Kinsler and Henderson. You have to merge them all together to create this efficient working bullpen. And, you know, we have a good enough offense. And I think the strength pitching is going to be fine. And if the bullpen meshes together like we're hoping it will, I don't see how the Brewers can lose the NL Central. I mean, obviously the Reds stand in their way and the Cardinals are there. But really, you give this team five less blown saves than last year, we're in the playoffs of 2012 easily.
Oh, absolutely.
You take this bullpen that we have now that we haven't seen pitch yet on paper, like we said, on paper that is really good. We see how they do in spring training, and then we take them to the regular season. And if they do well enough, this team is gonna win the NL Central. I don't see how they could be stopped.
Yeah, it's if the offense stays there and the pitching is what it says it is. Now, a good bullpen is a lot different than consistently good starting pitching, which we don't know if we have yet.
No, that's very true. I mean, it's hard to tell.
We know we have Marco Estrada. We know we have Yovani Gallardo and Marco Estrada, essentially. We know we have them. We don't know for sure that Mike Fiers is going to be the number three guy. We don't know that Willie Peralta is going to be the number four or the number three or the number two. We don't know that Mark Rogers or Tyler Thornburg are going to be on that rotation at all. It's still fairly possible that Tom Gorzolani comes in as a fifth, you know, or spot starter. It's certainly not out of the question. So, I mean, I'm hesitant to get on board of saying the Brewers are your Central Division champions. But I will say that as the team sits right now, it looks very, very good, and I don't think anyone thought it was going to look as good as it did going into 2013.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of spot starting Gorzolani really, I can't say I'm really opposed to it, but I feel like his arm, especially being a left-hander, is better suited in the rotation, because if we want to use left-hander, you know, it's going to be a little bit, you know, more risky, but, I mean, we do have Chris Narvison still to use.
Right.
And we got to think about what we're going to do with him. I mean, I like the idea of spot starting Martin Rogers. He seemed to do better than we did when we did with Mike Fiers. I think if you're going through rotation, hypothetically, it's going to have to be Gallardo, Estrada, probably Narvison, then Fiers, Peralta. That can change, especially the last three parts of that rotation, because I think Peralta can do well enough. He showed it in September. He can do well enough to start and go longer in the game, 6-7 innings, and that's what we need. And even if Fiers or whoever else falls behind, we can bring in our newly formed bullpen to help them out, and maybe Gorzolani can pitch an inning or two to help him bail that out, and then hopefully the game turns in our favor and so on and so forth. But I definitely like the idea of Peralta in this rotation. I think he can do really well. Obviously, I think we have no choice but to make Marco Estrada a lock, though. He has to be in this rotation. He did so well, and his numbers are very deceiving. The fact that he didn't get a win for so long, people will say, well, obviously he's awful. Well, no. I mean, Marco Estrada did really well, and that's a lot of credit he does not get. And
Estrada lost quite a few quality starts.
Yeah, so I just feel like this rotation as a whole, it can mesh together really well. Because you look at 2011, this is a rotation that, despite the Brewers not getting to the World Series, be getting very close.
Right.
This is one of the very few rotations in baseball that every pitcher in this rotation had over 10 wins. They can do it again. It's just a matter of piecing it all together. And it's hard to tell where this rotation is based on, you know, everybody in this rotation, aside from Narvison and Gallardo, has never pitched more than one season in the MLB. So, yeah, it's very hard to judge, say, okay, you know, Estrada is going to be a 13-game winner and Fiers is going to be a 10-game winner. It's hard to say that because we don't know. Because how many of us would have thought once September hits, or, you know, mid to late August, that Mike Fiers, who had dazzled us till that point, was going to fall off and completely be, you know, a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde sort of thing.
Oh, right. But that is, I mean, when a pitcher doesn't have, like, overpowering stuff, which Mike Fiers doesn't, it's only a matter of time until hitters start to see more and more of him and they say, okay, that's how you do it. That's where I need to make my adjustment. And that's what happened. Does it mean he's going to be a failure next season? No. Because he has the opportunity to make adjustments too, and I guarantee you he's making them right now. I don't think this is going to be the rotation of a few years ago where everyone had over 10 wins. Because we don't have the kind of pitchers now that can do that. You know?
Mm-hmm.
That year with Gallardo and Greinke and Markham and everyone, it was they all were very, I mean, top-level pitchers that season. I think it's going to be a tough road for the Brewers starters. I mean, Peralta has it in him to be a number one or a number two. Is that going to come out this year? Who knows? I mean, Gallardo's still not a household name, and why not is beyond me. But, I mean, he's your lock for 10-plus wins. I can even give you a pretty safe guarantee that he can get up to 15 wins without an issue. But beyond that, I mean, there are a lot of question marks, and that's what happens when you have a young team.
Yeah, you know, but with that, it's an easily controllable team because you can get these guys into somewhat of a groove and, you know, you can see, well, you know, this is still a team that competed for a playoff spot last year. So it's not like they went from NLCS one year to Cubs tier. You know, they, sorry, Cubs fans, I just had to make that joke because the Astros are no longer in this division.
Right.
It's not like the Brewers forgot how to play baseball. They were still there. And a lot of analysts and a lot of people didn't count them in, didn't think they had anything. But, you know, if they aren't those big market teams, they're not going to be noticed. And I just feel like the Brewers, for what they were given last year and the adversity they fought through from August until the end of the season, was incredible. There was not a better team in baseball last year than the Milwaukee Brewers from August on.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I would agree with you on that for the most part. I think making the playoffs would have cemented that. And I mean, the fact of the matter is, I think if they were that level team, they would have been in the playoffs. Even if it was from just that, like, month on, I think they would have made the playoffs. I'm not saying I don't believe in this Brewers team. I'm just saying let's not put the cart before the horse.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that either. I'm just saying we know what this team has. And it's, right. And it's very easy to place a team anywhere. I mean, obviously the Cardinals were huge favorites going into 2012, just winning a World Series in 2011. So, you know, we would love to place the Brewers there. And for the most part, I think they can be placed there. But we also have to look at the reality of the situation, like you said. These are young guys, you know, who haven't had a lot of MLB exposure, especially when you look at their starting rotation. And that's the biggest part of baseball right there, is your starting rotation. You know, offensively, I think we'll be fine still. You know, Corey Hart's still here. Martin Maldonado and Jonathan Lucre behind the plate is an amazing duo. You still have Aramis Ramirez. You still have the occasional Ricky Weeks. Outfield is tremendous. Braun, Gomez, Aoki. That is a tremendous outfield. Shortstop is still very, very unsure right now. Obviously, there's Gene Segura. They got in Donnie Murphy from the Marlins. That's another acquisition we got. Not sure what kind of role he'll play as well. And well, obviously, you throw guys like Taylor.
Adding Bridge has anything to say about it, probably not much.
Yeah, I mean, then you also have guys like Taylor Green and Jeff Bianchi who we can throw into the mix. So that's why I think shortstop and second base might be the weaker points. But aside from that, I mean, this is a team that can hit.
Right.
So I'm not really concerned in the offensive department, especially when you have that back-to-back in the lineup, when you have Aramis Ramirez, Brian Braun, and then Jonathan Lucroy. That doesn't concern me at all. I think that's a really strong point on this team.
Yeah, and I did have something to say on that really quickly. Specifically on Gene Segura, and then on Ryan Braun as well, because I know we wanted to get to Ryan Braun anyways. Gene Segura won the batting title in the Dominican Summer League, hitting well over 300 for the season. So you look at, you know, when you're a young guy like that, I mean, you play a lot of summer league ball or a lot of fall league ball. You go into the off season winter leagues. And it helps keep your rhythm a lot more. It helps you prepare a lot better. And I think this year, I mean, we didn't see future Hall of Fame stuff from Gene Segura last year, but we saw consistent good practices from him. And I think the fact that he just dominated the Dominican League sets him up pretty well for 2013. And also, you have to be excited about the fact that Ryan Braun is going to be playing in the World Baseball Classic. He played in 2009 was the last year that he played. That was his second year in Major League Baseball. And that season in 2009, he had his highest number of hits in a season, and he had his highest number of RBIs, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, just on Segura, real quickly, you were saying, you know, he's still really young. So he has a lot of time to develop in the type of shortstop we want him to, and I think that's something that Milwaukee's going to see him evolve into, is not, you know, like Nomar Garciaparra type shortstop, but more confident than what we've had in the past. He's going to be obviously more confident than Cesar Torres and Alex Gonzalez and insert random guy here that we had.
So you're saying Cody Ransom. Next Unesky Betancourt. That's what you're saying.
No, I think he'll be better than Yasky Betancourt. But I mean,
play defense and hit in the same game.
Yeah, I mean, it's surprising that actually happening. I think Segura is still young, so he has a lot of time to develop in the type of player that Milwaukee wanted to see fit for not only this lineup, but around the bases as well and defensively.
All right, talking
about Braun now. We have Braun in the World Baseball Classic. We have Braun trying to get on the cover of MLB 13, the show, which if you're listening to this, go vote for Braun. He definitely needs your votes because he's in last place right now. And just hashtag on Twitter, if you have Twitter, MLB 13 Braun. Get it out there. I mean, the man's playing for his country. He's a patriot, and you're not going to vote for a patriot? What kind of American are you? I mean,
wow.
I mean,
have you considered running for office, sir.
I mean, if Braun isn't your vote, you're a communist. I mean,
those are bold words, ladies and gentlemen. And we'd like to remind you that reviewing the Brew and the Fan Side of Network do not necessarily endorse the opinions of Mr. Benjamin Orr. I will say it would be awesome if Ryan Braun made the cover. Because I know Prince Fielder had made the cover when he was a Brewer. And obviously he proved that there wasn't any sort of curse with MLB 13 or with MLB the show as there was with, Madden. But personally, I'm a conscientious objector on this one because after this year, being an Xbox user, I don't get to play baseball video games anymore.
Yeah, I mean,
and that's a tough pill for me to swallow, and I don't think I want to endorse something that I'm not going to pay $400 so that I can play MLB 13.
Well, no, I mean, I don't have it either. I just think it'd be really cool to see him on there because I'm not buying a PS3 at any time soon, or probably ever, considering I'm more of a PC gamer, and I just bought a Wii U, which is an awesome console. It gets more hate than it should, and that's all I'm going to say about that. but really, though, I mean, Braun playing for the World Baseball Classic really helps them. I don't even know who's really else on this team yet. I don't know if they've announced it. But, you know, obviously Japan's going to be a tough team to beat.
They're coming through in pieces, right?
Yeah, they're, it hasn't been all at once, I don't believe.
Yeah, you know, I heard something about Joe Mauer is going to be playing as well. But that's the only other name I've heard for U.S.,
you know, Japan's going to be tough. South Korea's going to be tough. Mexico's going to be tough. And the U.S. might face these teams if they make it that far. Though surprisingly enough, not really surprisingly, because guys probably want to take some time off. Yu Darvish isn't playing for Japan. Ichiro Suzuki isn't playing for Japan.
Nori's not playing for Japan.
No, Nori's not playing for Japan. And I think the shortstop, or second baseman, I don't know what he is, from the Seattle Mariners, Kawasaki, I don't think he's playing either. So, I mean, a lot of big-name Japanese players that play in the big leagues right now in America aren't playing, so maybe that affects it a little bit because Darvish was a big part of that in 2009 when they beat Korea. So who knows there. It's awesome to see Ryan Braun there, though. He's fought through a lot of adversity in the past year or so. So for him to get there, I think it's an honor not only for him, but I think for Brewers fans in general to see that, hey, our guy is there. That's awesome.
Right. No, absolutely. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, the World Baseball Classic, I think, is cool. I think it's a great idea. I think it's awesome. I don't know that many, even baseball fans, agree with me on that. But, you know, and when you have one of your guys playing, I think you're right. I think it absolutely ups the stakes a little bit. It's cool to see the international competition. I think it's awesome that it's a world competition that the United States doesn't, in fact, dominate. It's a really, really, really fun time if you get a chance to watch it. I would highly recommend everybody get a chance to see it because international styles of play are so much different than the way Americans approach baseball. you know, the Japanese, for instance, are very much about getting the little things done and very much about, you know, the whole team effort. And their pitching is much different and, you know. So it's great to see all of these kind of individual styles of play come together and face off against each other. I'm fully endorsing the World Baseball Classic. I think that everyone should watch it, and especially if Braun's playing. Last time he played, I think he hit like 380 or something, and he only played in like 8 games or something, but I mean, he did just an amazing job. So,
no, I fully agree. I love the World Baseball Classic. I watched most of it back in 2009. And, you know, this year it's only exclusively on MLB Network. It's not going to be on ESPN. So not everybody gets to see it. But, you know, hey, you know, I think the overwhelming majority of Americans and other people around the world can. And, no, it's a very cool thing. Because, like you said, you get to see other international styles of play. And I remember back in December, I was at work one day. I was just setting up the ad. And I had it on MLB Network, and I looked up, and it was an actual game. It was a qualifying game between, I think, Chinese Taipei and this New Zealand team.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting to see it because, I mean, New Zealand people play baseball? I mean, it was just so weird. But then you think about it, like, there are some Australians in the game. Grant
Australia
Balfour.
And New Zealand have professional baseball leagues.
Yeah, I mean, Grant Balfour, the closer for the A's, he's Australian. Eric O'Flaherty, the reliever for the Braves, he's Australian. I know there are a few more. I can't think of who they are right now. But, you know, it's intriguing to see.
Former Brewer Dave Nielsen.
Yeah, and you see, like, you know, obviously you expect, like, China and Japan, because you see it, you know, in the kids. We know you have the Little League World Series, you know, they're always really good at it. And then, you know, your Latin American teams with, like, Mexico and Venezuela, you know, you're expecting to see them. But you see, like, these Australian teams or European teams in, like, mm-hmm. Canada. And it's just really cool to see it. And I remember, I think it was either last year or the year before, Bud Selig had been talking about, and I don't think this is going to happen anytime soon, at least not while he's still a commissioner, because he probably wants to pass on to the next guy, is have whoever wins the World Series here play whoever wins the Japanese championship and have them play in a series after that. And I think that'd be really cool.
That would be awesome.
You know, have like the Giants play, I think, actually the Giants, because the Giants won here and the Yomiuri Giants won in Japan. You know, the Giants versus the Giants.
that would be pretty awesome, actually.
So, I mean, that's really cool. It's being hosted this year, I believe, at San Francisco's ballpark in AT&T Park.
It's either that, I think they're doing some of the pool, some of the early pool games are playing in Chase Field also.
Yeah, but I think the championship game is being played in AT&T Park, though. You can correct me if I'm wrong there. I'm pretty sure that's where it's being played.
That we'd need to check up on, but yeah, I'll go with that for now. That sounds right.
Yeah, but I mean, I have always thought it's really fascinating to see other styles of play, because, you know, you have and you can see the mentalities of different cultures in baseball. And it's just not, you know, the Japanese being less aggressive than Americans. Because the Japanese, you know, they're more contact. They're more strenuous about their training for baseball. And then you have, you know, an Australian mentality, which I don't really know how to describe that, because you don't see many Australian players. And it's really interesting. I think I kind of wish it was more than every 4 years. I wish it was maybe like every 2 years or something. But, you know, regardless, it's cool enough.
The process is just too long to make that happen, unfortunately.
Yeah, so. Alright, the next topic we're going to get into is probably going to take a good portion of the rest of the show, and it's not as lighthearted and as fun as this past portion was, but
oh, let me stretch out for this one.
You might have to get a little prepared for this, and as you all know, yesterday, the writers voted on people to get in the Hall of Fame. Very, very controversial ballot. And for the 8th time in, you know, baseball history since they've been voting, nobody got elected into the Hall of Fame. Last time this happened was 96, and 17 years later it happens in 2013. So what a great way to start off the year.
It was a complete joke.
It's an absolute disgrace to the game. it's an absolute disgrace to the players who are on the ballot that have a legitimate shot of getting in. And it's just a slap in the face to baseball. And I don't get why the writers vote nobody in. That makes no sense.
Well, and here's my problem. The Hall of Fame voters were not surprised by this ballot. They're acting like they have no idea what to do with this ballot. And that's why, you know, this kind of came down to no one getting in, because, oh, well, Jeff Bagwell and Mike Piazza fit the profile of a steroid user, so we can't really get them in. You know, Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens are widely speculated, though never proven, to have used steroids. Therefore, we can't let them in. You know, and on down the list. And they act like this showed up overnight. They act like the entire steroid era didn't happen, and they didn't have time to put a plan in place for this. They're allowed to amend the Hall of Fame voting rules. If they want to amend the voting rules to say anyone at any time that was, you know, under suspicion of using performance-enhancing drugs is in no way allowed, is in no way allowed on the ballot, that's fine. I'll have to agree to that. I think it's stupid, but I'll have to agree to that, and those people can be removed from the ballot, because this isn't going away in 2014. Or 2015, or 2016, on until forever. So, I don't think that anything was solved by not letting these people on into the hall the first time. So there's that. There is a clause in the voting regulations for the Hall of Fame about playing with character and integrity. Or, they have to look at a player's character and integrity. So, with that in mind, I guess you have a case of leaving Bonds and Clemens and Sosa and McGuire off of the Hall of Fame. Except that you have people in the Hall of Fame, like Mickey Mantle, Kennesaw Mountain Landis, Babe Ruth, Ty Cobb, George Brett, Kirby Puckett, Reggie Jackson, Connie Mack, Casey Stengel, Spalding, Van Johnson, and Comiskey, who are all awful people who worked with very little character and integrity in their everyday life and occasionally on the ballpark and in their front offices, who are all in the Hall of Fame. Now, we can either agree that we need to have a real character and integrity clause to enshrine people in the Hall of Fame and get people like those out because they don't stand for character and integrity in either their everyday life or on the ball field, or we need to agree that we just don't care about those guys. And moving forward, we're going to make sure that the Hall of Fame is a pure, clean place. You also have a complete disparity of Negro League players compared to Major League Baseball players in the American Baseball Hall of Fame. But they have no problem announcing and embracing the fact that Major League Baseball used to be racist against African Americans and Latino-born players. We're fine with educating generations of baseball players about that. But we're going to simply ignore that the 90s happened at all. But they did. Everything you saw happened, and those players were the exceptional baseball players of their time, regardless of how you feel about performance-enhancing drugs. The writers copped out. They got scared, and they wasted an entire year of everyone's time.
I think what really hurts about this for other players is, I'm going to respond to what you said, but I want to say something before that, is guys like Jack Morris, who have been on the ballot forever, this really hurts their chances of getting in, because now they're associated with this ballot that is so controversial that hasn't allowed a vote in 17 years, that nobody has gotten in since, you know.
Right.
And guys like that, it's harder for them, because you have to look at the reason they're not in, the reason why Craig Biggio, Mike Piazza, Jack Morris, the reason why they did not get elected, Tim Raines did not get elected yesterday, is because they got dragged down with everything else on this ballot. That's my fear heading into next year, when you have Glavine and Smoltz and Frank Thomas and Mike Mussina on the ballot.
Those guys are all getting in next year.
Well, yes, but you still have Jack Morris for the 15th year, which will be the final year. And you still have Tim Raines and Mike Piazza and Jeff Bagwell and Craig Biggio who are still on this ballot. So you can only vote for 10 people, and it's going to be a lot harder. In response to what you said, it's hard. It's not that it's hard. It's just nearly impossible to try and cover up, and I say that in quotes, what happened 60, 70, 80 years ago in the character and integrity of players like you named. Yeah, they're in. But I hate the excuse, well, they're in, so should other people be. I don't buy that at all. Because there needs to be a definitive stopping point to where the baseball writers and the Hall of Fame need to realize, okay, wait, let's stop for a second and let's make this clear division. Let's make an example out of some of these players who people, yeah, they're going to be pissed off because they're not going to get in the Hall of Fame. But we need to make that division that if you do this, you're not getting in. Yeah, we had people slip through the cracks. And yeah, it makes up for a good portion of the Hall of Fame. But you have to make this division clear and you have to make it solid. Because if you don't, we're going to continue to have these controversies. If you say, okay, people who were speculated with or admitted to, like Mark McGwire, doing some type of performance-enhancing drug or steroid should not be on the ballot. And people keep saying, well, what about, you know, Willie Mays and he did amphetamines and things like that. Okay, that happened. It's done with. He's in. There's nothing we can do about that. If you seriously want to take Willie Mays on the Hall of Fame, you've got to be high.
That's a very interesting point because you want to take let's say Hank Aaron comes out and he says, I took performance enhancing drugs. What if you can't deny the fact that he was still an incredible baseball player. Kirby Puckett did the same thing. If George Brett did the same thing. If Cal Ripken Jr. did the same thing. It doesn't change the fact that they played baseball exceptionally. It changes the way that they played baseball some of the time, sure. But it doesn't change the fact that they played fantastically. And nobody in this sport got cheated out of anything. Frank Thomas played his whole career clean. We still talk about him the same way that we talk about Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens and Rafael Palmeiro and everybody else.
Yes, but you have to look at Barry Bonds when he was with the Pirates and then when he was with the Giants.
Physically he got enormous.
Yeah, and I mean, and I'm not saying, really, don't get me wrong here, I'm not saying Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens and Sammy Sosa were not incredible players. But the fact that their careers are so clouded with PED use, suspected PED use, and suspected steroid use, and things like that, the fact that they're so heavily suspicious on that with them, instead of saying Jeff Bagwell or Frank Thomas, it raises a lot of red flags here. And
write it right on the plaque. You're heading in, but we're going to write on the plaque that you were suspected of performance-enhancing drugs or you used performance-enhancing drugs.
I don't think you give them that satisfaction, though. I think you need to not let them in to make a point. You need to make this division. And, yeah, it's going to suck, and a lot of people are going to complain that Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens are not in the Hall of Fame. But if you don't make this division, what if 20 years down the line we have this same exact case happen again? We need to stop this somehow. And, yeah, it's going to have to be with people like them not getting in. And, yeah, it's going to suck for baseball, for players like that, people who won the 7-time Cy Young Award winner in Roger Clemens and who broke Hank Aaron's home run record in Barry Bonds, that they're not in the Hall of Fame. But that's just the way it has to go. PED users should not be allowed in the Hall of Fame. And I'm not saying that either one of them used, but it's highly suspected that they used. We have no proof of it. At least we have no knowledge of it. It may exist and may not exist. We have no idea. But the fact that they're so heavily regarded with it means that there needs to be a clear cut here, and there needs to be this cutoff line.
Every single baseball player who played from about 1989 until the Mitchell Report in 2008 is suspected of using performance-enhancing drugs because we have no idea how far baseball how far this spread throughout baseball, because the media ignored it. The owners, managers, and commissioner's office of Major League Baseball simply ignored the fact that it was going on. The players themselves never made an effort to root out that this was happening because there was too much for them to lose. That means every single person in those 15 to 20 years are suspected steroid users, which means none of them should enter the hall, which means an entire era, an important era of Major League Baseball, has to be erased from human memory, which is embarrassing and stupid when you think of it this way, because the Baseball Hall of Fame, its own mission statement, says that it needs to educate the public on the history of the game and make note of the most exciting and important baseball players of their time and connecting those players through the generations. Running away from history is not living up to its mission. The writers need to have a real-life conversation about what they're going to do with PED users, and until that happens, which it won't, the Hall of Fame is going to continue to be an enormous lie. It was built on a lie. Baseball did not start in Cooperstown, New York. The history of baseball has no connection to the town of Cooperstown, outside of the fact that in 1936, a bunch of people built a Hall of Fame in order to get more people to come to Cooperstown, New York.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
I mean, we can't pick and choose which lies we want to believe.
And I'm not saying that... I'm not trying to single out Bonds and Clemens from this, but do you honestly suspect that guys like Kenny Lofton and Nomar Garciaparra use steroids? Seriously. I mean...
I don't know. I can't say with impunity that they did not.
I mean...
As a rational person, as someone who wants to consider himself a journalist, I can't hold anyone above suspicion if I'm going to hold people that were not proven of wrongdoing under suspicion.
Okay.
It's unfair to Barry Bonds, who was never convicted of steroid use, and it's unfair of Roger Clemens, who never tested positive, to say, yes, they did steroids, Bagwell, Biggio, Lofton, Tim Raines even, that none of these people did. It simply doesn't hold water for me.
I don't know. I just feel like you have to make an example out of something to get anything started.
Make an example out of an innocent person.
And I'm not saying I condone it. I'm just saying you have to do it if you want to make this clear division and we don't go the next 4 or 5 years without anybody going in the Hall of Fame. I mean...
And I'm saying if the Hall of Fame wants to be true to its mission of educating and bridging the gap of the history of baseball and examining what the history of baseball means to the culture of this country, we can't run away from the fact that this happened.
No, I mean, they can highlight the 89 through, you know, the present day, even, and the fact that this is such a clouded area of baseball, and that this whole entire era has just been so, you know, I don't want to say hush-hush, but it's been just pointing the finger at everybody, and it's so hard to tell, like you said, rationally, who stands above who, but... I think in a more common sense thing, you just look at people. You just look at, let's go away from the steroid things and look at character. Look at guys like Roger Clemens. Is he a person of character you want in the Hall of Fame? I don't believe by his character standards he belongs in the Hall of Fame. Not at all.
He's Ty Cobb.
Yes, but Ty Cobb was, you know...
Ty Cobb refused to play 6 games because someone called him a racial slur and he was a white man. And he said he couldn't stand for that kind of treatment. And the commissioner of baseball let it slide. And that commissioner, by the way, is also in the Hall of Fame. That commissioner and his friend, Ben Johnson, who also said, never, as long as I'm alive, will a black man or a person of color play in Major League Baseball. And they have awards named after them.
I understand that.
So let's not talk about character as if it's something that Major League Baseball really cares about. It's something that a bunch of old writers really care about because their favorite players didn't get the shadier sides of their character exposed.
This is why this vote is so incredibly difficult. And it doesn't have to be. Because it's hard to say, basing on a person's character, where they stand. But like I said before, we can point all the fingers back in the 30s and the 40s when we had all these racial problems. It doesn't change the fact that it happened. And we can't change the fact that it's in the Hall of Fame. We can't change the fact that we, in the later part of the days, glorify people like Ty Cobb and people who were on the base paths, very good players. We don't ignore that. But there's nothing we can do about it. This is a point in time, the 1990s through 2000s, this is a point in time that we have the power in order to change and try, and I know it's impossible to do this, to purify this game a little bit more. To look at people and say, we cannot put you in the Hall of Fame. I'm sorry you had a great career, but it is clouded with heavy speculation. And I know it's almost like a witch hunt here, going after certain people. I know it's hard to do that, but you have to make an example out of somebody.
It's wrong to do that, is what I'm saying.
I know it's wrong to do that, but you have to do that in order to try and clear this up a little bit more. Because then you're just going to have both sides at it forever, and there's going to be no answer to it. Regardless whether or not...
There is an absolute answer to it, in my mind.
Well, besides letting everybody in, that's...
It's either let everybody in, or take everybody out who has character issues. Because if you're going to hinge the Hall of Fame on character, which they never did before... Which the Hall of Fame never did before... I mean, even Ted Williams was a terrible asshole. Just awful. Like, in his private life, he publicly acknowledged that he did not care about Boston Red Sox fans. It was the pinnacle of his personality as a player, that he didn't care about anybody outside of the game. And we let him in. Now, if we're going to pretend that the Hall of Fame is about character, we need to make it real, is what I'm saying. You can't pick and choose when you're going to decide to stand on principle. The Hall of Fame and the Hall of Fame voters are allowed to amend any and all rules about the inclusion of players in the Hall of Fame. If they're going to pretend that this is a place of principle and character and integrity, then the people that don't stand for principle, character, and integrity need to be out of the Hall of Fame if we're going to continue to exclude people on the basis of character and integrity. To me, that is pretty simple and clear. I understand to other people it's hard because you say, well, that happened so long ago, I don't know if we can just go back and change history. You're right, we can't. But if you're going to make a statement like this going forward, you can do this sort of thing retroactively and say, we are going to clean up the Hall of Fame. So these people are no longer part of it because they don't belong in what we believe the Hall of Fame stands for.
But the argument for it happens, so let's just let more people in on the same grounds, the same basis for it, I just hate that argument. Because, okay, yeah, people screwed up and people messed up before, so we're just going to continue to allow this, we're just going to continue to let this slide by, and I don't get why, because you do that.
Because that's important to the education of the fans of the game going forward.
But nothing,
it's vitally important to learning lessons about the game.
But nothing is going to change in the end. We're still going to have the... Okay, if Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens make the Hall of Fame, we're going to hear more of, well, why they shouldn't be in there, as opposed as why they should be in there if they don't make it. And we're never going to have... It's never going to be settled. It's regardless of what happens, this will never be settled. And it's so hard to place an actual definitive thing that doesn't A, clear out the Hall of Fame, or B, continue this, let this slide. Because saying, okay, well, he was suspected of using it, so we can't let him in, but, you know, you can look at somebody else who used amphetamines or whatever, or you can look at people like that and say, well, they're in. Well, yeah, so why do we have to continue to allow this to happen? We can stop it by preventing people from getting in, these controversial people from getting in. And yeah, it sucks, because then you have those double standards. But it's so hard to tell. And yeah, you're right. You can't just pick and choose people to put in there. This isn't, you know...
Well, I suppose you can, because the Baseball Writers Association of America do exactly that, but...
Yeah, but I mean, in a general sense of terms, you just can't pick and choose who you want in there, because it just doesn't happen that way. And I just don't like that argument, because it happened before, we can let it happen again. No, we need a stopping point somewhere, and whatever that stopping point is, whether it's clearing out the Hall of Fame, whether it's not allowing Bonds and Clemens in, whether it's allowing Bonds and Clemens in and letting it continue, I have no idea what your answer is. Personally, I don't think they need to be in there, just to set an example. That is just me, and it's nothing against either man. But I just feel that if you want to take the height of this steroid era, the height of this witch hunt, and try and close the door on it, which you're not going to anyway, because the hinge is broken. If you want to try and kill this a little bit more, you're going to piss off a lot of people regardless of what you do. If you're the Hall of Fame voters, if you're Bug Selig, if you're whoever, you're going to piss off a lot of people. And it's just about what is right. But then again, how do we know what is right and what is wrong? We look at examples through history. We look at examples through now. And how can we, as people, judge what is moral and what isn't? We as journalists have to take a stand and say, okay, these are the facts. We're not going to be swayed either way. We're just going to report it as is. And we have to say, well, if you're going to do this, you have to do this. And if you're going to put somebody on this pedestal, you have to do the same thing here. You can't put somebody else above somebody else based on suspicion. But if somebody's heavily suspicious about it, you know, like the Bonds thing, like the Clemens thing, you have Mark McGuire who even admitted to it, then you delve into that a little more. And I know they've been doing it for years with the grand jury trials and things like that, but you have three options here. And like I said, it's A, you just raise the Hall of Fame like you said, B, you don't let them in, and you continue that streak through however long baseball exists, and or C, you don't do anything. So,
and they're going with option C right now, and it's embarrassing. What needs to happen is the writers have a chance. They had since Jose Canseco's book came out and since the congressional hearings to decide what to do. And instead of coming together as a group and saying what is best for baseball, which even if I thought that what they thought was best for baseball was retarded, I would have accepted the fact that they through the time, they turned into journalists, finally, investigated what happened, and made a real decision. The writers in the Baseball Writers Association of America who have Hall of Fame votes have not done that. Instead, they've just used it to create more column inches, used it to increase their readership, used it to continue a discussion in the public instead of making a real decision, and it's stupid, and it's wrong. And it's kicking the can down the road, so maybe one day if you have a Hall of Fame vote, or one day if someone else we know has a Hall of Fame vote, we have to deal with this mess.
You know,
that's not right, because the people who have the vote now helped create that mess. It is partly their fault, and they know it, and they're choosing to run away from it, and make it all about the players, and it's their fault, when they know they were complicit in the crime.
If you had a vote for yesterday's election, who would you have put in?
Bonds, Clemens, McGuire, Biggio, Bagwell, Piazza.
I had a much smaller list. Well, not really smaller. I would have put in Bagwell. I would have put in Biggio. I would put in Morris, Raines, Piazza, Dale Murphy, and Curt Schilling. Dale Murphy, I don't even think, got that much percentage of the vote anyway. I think it's a shame that Biggio did not get in. He had about 68% of the vote.
Right.
And the fact that the Raiders couldn't at least put him in is what really sickens me about the entire thing. Because we know how good of a player Craig Biggio was, and you can't vote him. And you can't have 75% of these writers who have glorified him for so long not put him in. Because they're trying to put up a vendetta against either putting Bonds in or not putting Bonds in. I mean, come on, it's childish. It is absolutely childish.
They're running away from the truth of what happened in baseball. And they're running away from a chance to make this a real-life educational experience for fans down the road. They're running away from the fact that baseball came into the second or third or fourth period of questionable judgment. Now, it took people a while to talk about racism in baseball. It took people a while to talk about the fact that Latin-born players were paid one-fourth the amount that white players were paid. It took them almost no time to talk about illicit drug use, of, you know, cocaine and methamphetamines in Major League Baseball in the 70s and 80s. And the fact of the matter is, we've already enshrined multiple performance-enhancing drug users. I can guarantee it. They just didn't live in the time when we were going through these investigations. I find it, by not letting Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Sosa, McGuire, and other suspected PED or admitted PED users into the Hall of Fame, you're saying that they are not the best baseball players of their time, which is false.
I want to bring something up then, because I know he'll never get into the Hall of Fame. But you say that about not letting the best baseball players of all time in, and I know he did this to himself. But if you let Barry Bonds and Mark McGuire...
Rose in.
Exactly.
Yes.
If that happens, you let Pete Rose in, you let Shoeless Joe Jackson into the Hall of Fame.
Absolutely you should. Both of those people absolutely should be in the Hall of Fame.
And if you don't, then baseball is the most hypocritical thing in the world. At least the writers make it...
Oh, Jesus, buddy.
I mean, at least the writers make it to be that way, because if you don't let somebody who, yes, gambling on your team in any sport is not a good move. It's an awful move. It shames your character. It shames the game. But if you're going to put in people like Mark McGuire who've admitted to taking steroids, which I don't think Mark McGuire is ever actually going to get in. I think he got like 15% of the vote or something. I don't think he'll ever get in. But if you allow Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens and Sammy Sosa to get in, you damn well better let Pete Rose in. That's all I've got to say about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Under the current rules of the Hall of Fame, anyone that was banned from baseball is not allowed in the Hall of Fame, which clears up your issue right there. You can just say, anyone that has ever been suspected of performance-enhancing drugs is hereby banned from baseball for life. That solves our problem right there.
But if they decide to go against that, then there's going to be a lot to do. I mean, there's going to be a lot to do. And until there's a decision reached, whatever the decision is, you know, it's going to change the game one way or another. Me personally, I will never, if I ever had a vote, I would never vote for a known PED user or a known steroid user, just because I feel that we need to have that stopping point. I just feel like, and yeah, I know it's very hypocritical of me to say, because you have this, like you said, this entire era of players, anywhere from Kenny Lofton to Barry Bonds, that are suspected PED users. People who are still playing now. You know, Todd Helton, Derek Jeter, they're in that same class. Honestly, I do not think Todd Helton or Derek Jeter has ever done performance-enhancing drugs. But, you know, like you said, the rational point, you have no idea. But, you know, because you draw all these double standard lines, and you have to jump through so many hoops, and you have to put on so many hats and so many different faces. And why? Why can't you just say, I, A, support Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, or B, I don't support Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, instead of having this C option where you hem-haw around the problem and you don't fix it? There needs to be a definitive answer. And yeah, if Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens get in the Hall of Fame, I won't be happy about it, but you know what? I'll accept it. Because, you know what? I love baseball too much to, you know, pout in a corner and not get anything done. You know, whether or not they get into it, you know, we'll know within the next 14 years. But, you know, I think whether or not you support them, the fact that they'll either be in or not is something that we need to figure out. Not, we don't know yet. We're just going to continue battling with each other. We need to find a stopping point. Whatever that stopping point is, we need to get to it. Because baseball cannot go on without having people in the Hall of Fame. And then you get to a point where you have so many people on the ballot, you're not going to be able to vote anybody in. Because after the 2014 ballot with Glavine and Smoltz and Frank Thomas and Mike Mussina, then you have Randy Johnson coming up. Then you have Nomar Garciaparra coming up. And then you get into future years where you have Derek Jeter on the ballot and Todd Helton on the ballot. And then it gets even more harder of who you put in.
So, no, you're absolutely right. The issue here is... Well, and meanwhile, by the way, the Hall of Fame is losing visitors hand over fist every single year. They're losing visitors. Literally, people have stopped going to the National Baseball Hall of Fame. Which says right there that something needs to change. Something needs to change about either A, the process that the players are put in, the way that players are enshrined in the Hall of Fame, and the way the museum conducts itself as a tool to educate and enlighten Americans about the history and culture of the game of baseball. It's obvious that what they're doing right now isn't working.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise, if it was right, we wouldn't have all this backlash and all this controversy about it, and we wouldn't even be talking about it right now. We'd probably be still talking about Ryan Braun being a Patriot for our team and not being on the cover of MLB The Show. I mean, if the writers didn't feel the incessant need to try and create all this controversy, because obviously there are writers that came out and said, hey, I am voting for Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. Hey, I am not voting for Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens. Okay. Then why can't we at least get somebody else elected, like Jack Morris, like Craig Biggio? Why can't we at least get them in? You know, why do we have to be so focused upon two guys that still have 14 years to get in? You know, I don't get that. We have to focus on what we have now, and then we can get to that. We have 10 slots, and they've been talking possibly about maybe to extending it, you know, 12 to 15 slots to vote for. But even then, everybody's on the ballot doesn't mean they're worthy of it. I mean, Aaron Seeley, he got one vote, and who voted for him, I have no idea. But obviously guys like that aren't going to get in. So, excuse me. But it's just, you take one problem and you throw it into everything else that was okay, and now you have a bunch of underlying problems that are never going to be solved. You know, because...
Well, the whole history of baseball is a gray area. Let's not pretend that this game was black and white up until, you know, 1998. It absolutely was not. The fact of the matter is, if there were people that were better baseball players than the people that we're talking about, those records that they had and those performances that they created would have been beaten, and they have not.
You look at just an example, and I know, like we said before, it's a completely different type of style of playing, but Sadaharu Oh in the Japanese leagues,
yes,
had, I think, 888 home runs.
Right.
You translate that over here, he's a legend.
Mm-hmm.
Do you hear this issue that much with Japanese baseball? Not as often. And, like I said, a completely different style of play, but you look at some guys throughout the years who have done really well over here, Ichiro, Hideki Matsui, and you would never link their names to PEDs or steroids at all. And...
Well, I think you have to.
Well, yeah, you have to because they're in that bracket. But I don't get why, you know, we can glorify something like that, like what Sadahara O did. But we can't look at what's been done here and say, okay, this is an achievement, but we have to scrutinize every little thing about it. You know, when Hank Aaron was going for breaking Babe Ruth's record, he was getting death threats. There was still a lot of racial tension then.
Right.
And let's not kid ourselves. That is a portion of baseball. That's a really, really dark area. I mean...
Right. And we love rational discussions about it. And further, our understanding and our appreciation of the game of baseball. I don't think that by saying we're letting suspected or admitted performance enhancing drug users into the Hall of Fame, and we're going to look at their legacy fair-handedly the way that an academic institution or a museum should do, I don't think that's glorifying anything. I think that's completing your mission, as you yourself stated, that you are going to use the Hall of Fame as an educational tool. They have programs talking about living a substance-free lifestyle. You can use examples like Barry Bonds and like Roger Clemens, as these people are forever known now. We enshrine them ourselves as people that were part of a time in baseball where they used performance-enhancing drugs. You can put them in the Hall of Fame and say they were steroid users. The fact that they're going into the Hall of Fame does not deny the fact that they might have cheated. In fact, it tells everybody in the world that they might have cheated, but regardless of that fact, they played better for a longer period of time than many other players in Major League Baseball. That is a fact. That is history. That is undeniable. That's like when Melky Cabrera won the batting title this year. Oh, I'm sorry, wait. Buster Posey won the batting title because Melky Cabrera tested positive, right?
Yeah.
Wrong.
Wait.
More hits in more at-bats, or, you know, more hits in his number of at-bats than Buster Posey had hits in his at-bats. It's math. It happened. Get over it. You can say, Melky Cabrera won the batting title. That year he tested positive for a performance-enhancing substance. Boom. Accept history for what it is. Don't whitewash it. Don't run away from it.
And I think with Bonds and Clemens and Sosa not getting in this year, and it's hard to tell because this is going to continue for the next 14 years. I think this first strike is the most fatal strike, though. Considering the fact that Clemens, out of all of them, got the highest percent of votes at 38%. I think it was like 37.2. I don't remember what it was. It was around there, though. It wasn't 40, I know that. The fact that they didn't even get 40% of the vote, I think really, really shows America, it shows baseball, it shows the world, that these players, regardless of whether they did it or not, are now tainted with this because they did not get in. You take away the steroid talk and PED talk away from Barry Bonds, he gets in yesterday with at least 98 or 99% of that vote.
Right, he beats Tom Seaver.
You add that steroid and PED talk to them, and has always been highly suspected of them, I don't know if they'll ever get in. Honestly, I think that first shot is the most fatal, because it proves to them that the writers are not putting them in now. What's going to change in, you know, 7-8 years from now?
My issue with this is then, if these guys aren't worth getting into the Hall of Fame, then there's a group of players below them basically that must be worthy of getting in the Hall of Fame, right?
That's the way it seems to be.
Those players didn't get into the Hall of Fame. So if those players didn't get into the Hall of Fame, there must be a level of players below them that are completely clear of suspicion that must be allowed into the Hall of Fame.
And then you're putting your Aaron Sealy's and Larry Walker's into the Hall of Fame. You know...
Exactly. So, I guess the problem is, the problem is you have to literally elect no one into the Hall of Fame for the rest of existence, or you need to accept that some of the best players of our era, the best players of their eras, were practicing, you know, low character or poor judgment, and you have to accept that as a reality and let those players in. Or abandon the entire Hall of Fame project for what it is, which is just a silly little way of showing baseball fans who were the best players to ever play the game.
Yeah, and I'm not disagreeing with you there. I just think that the fact that we all know, before any steroid talk was linked to Barry Bonds, he was a Hall of Famer. We knew this. Everybody knew this. That's an undeniable fact of baseball. Same thing with Roger Clemens. However, the fact that they are linked to these things, and will be till the day they die, and till the day the earth ends, when legacies are no longer a thing of existence, or even a thought, when humankind is no longer here. Until that day happens, these two men are going to be forever linked to that. And with that, the fact that it's so heavy as well raises a lot of suspicion towards them. And I'm not to say he did it or not. I'm not here to judge Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens as a character. I'm no different than they are as human beings. Nobody
is.
Well, except
that they played baseball phenomenally for years.
Okay, crush my hopes and dreams even more. But as a human being, though, as a moral human being, I have no rights of judging Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens as people. And I never will. That's not my job. And that's nobody's job.
Except the Baseball Writers Association of America.
But, I just could never vote for him if I was a voter. I just couldn't, because it's just something you have to do. You have to set a precedent. And it's not the most popular way to do it, but it's one way of doing it without rolling over. And I understand people like to stand up and, you know, fight for what they believe in. I completely am fine with that. But when we continue to, you know, go back and forth, and then nothing gets done, and no progress gets done, and all that we get out of is more speculation about players, and nobody gets in, then what are we really achieving in the end? I mean, either A, we all suck it up and join one side, or B, we continue to let it go on and just have nothing happen. So I don't know what it is we come to. You know, you and I obviously have different opinions on this. You think they should be in. I don't think they should be in. But one of us is going to be right in the end. One of us is going to be wrong. We may both be wrong in the end. But I have no idea what the next 14 years hold for Bonds, for Clemens, for Sosa, and for the guys who are going to be on the ballot next year, what their 15 years holds. You know, it is going to not get any easier, because we have to look at the fact that we have a bunch of people set in their ways, and they're not going to change how they vote. And if we continue to have these people for the next 14 years, then Bonds and Clemens will never get in. And then that's a part of baseball that will shift. 2027 will be the year that we will finally know whether between 2013 and 2027, whether or not those players got in. And if they didn't, then baseball either changes for the better or changes for the worse. Right now is at a very, very bad tipping point.
Well, I'll say that baseball itself is not in a very bad way. The people who are steering the course of the history of baseball are in a very bad place. The game itself is fantastic and was fantastic through the entire steroid era. I saw Barry Bonds play in person. I saw Mark McGwire play in person. I saw Sammy Sosa play in person. I saw Roger Clemens play in person. There was no denying the fact that those guys were phenomenal ball players. That when I was watching them, I was watching the history of baseball unfold. And now, I have to tell myself that those guys aren't the best players in baseball. That those guys aren't the preeminent athletes of their time. What I have to do is lie to myself. And I don't really like to do that.
Well, nobody does. I mean,
but there are
you know, hundreds of baseball voters who are just fine doing that, who are feel completely justified in doing that. And it's silly.
Because I think it goes to that moral issue, which I know is really laughable considering all, what we were just talking about with the racism and everything that's happened in the game. I think they take it not only just to an athletic proportion, they take it to the moral standard. And they look at that and they say, gee, if this guy cheated, he doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame. It's as simple and clear-cut as that, but they take it and chop it into so many other pieces that nobody can figure out what the hell is going on, and nothing's going to get completed because of it.
George Brett got thrown out of a baseball game for cheating.
Pine tar, wasn't it?
Yes. And we are to assume that that was a one-time thing, and then never again he ever used more substance on a bat or baseball or anything for the rest of his career. And that man's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I mean, and there are writers on the ballot right now who probably voted him in.
Because
who looked at that ballot and said, that man is a worse cheater than George Brett, who we know was a cheater. And that's where the problem comes in. This isn't about character and integrity. This is McCarthyism in baseball.
Yeah, it is a witch hunt. I'm not going to disagree with that there. But it's just, yeah, it sucks that people like this are in the Hall of Fame, because of clearly we know there's that saying, once a cheater, always a cheater. Whether that applies to George Brett, whether that applies to Barry Bonds, I don't know. I don't know either man personally, and, you know, I'm not going to judge their moral code and their ethics from what I'm told by the media or what I'm, you know, what I read on, you know, ESPN or whatever. I'm not going to base, you know, my decision on saying, oh, well, you know, he's a pretty awesome guy, or, you know, he's a pretty awful guy. I'm not going to say that, because I'm not going to let somebody else dictate what I think. So, and I think that's the problem with baseball. Not baseball, but I think it's the problem with the writers, and I think it's the problem with this whole Hall of Fame scenario, is people don't really want to think about it, whether or not it is that they support Bonds and Clemens, or whether they don't. They just want to follow what somebody else says. And if the overwhelming majority thinks that they do not belong in the Hall of Fame, then so be it. But stick to that and quit creating all this controversy. If you think they belong into it, then so be it. Put them in. I mean, the controversy is never going to go away, regardless of what happens. But it's just, this witch hunt really is just so silly. And it makes the baseball writers look so, so stupid.
I completely agree.
I don't know why it has to be this difficult. Either take a side or you shouldn't be a voter.
Because we all made it this difficult. And, I mean, these people, these players received votes, you know? It wasn't like it was zeros across the board. It wasn't like every single one of the voters turned in an empty ballot. So people have made decisions, you know, they've made personal decisions about it, but I think the time has come that as an organization, the Hall of Fame and the baseball writers need to make a decision about the steroid era as a whole. They need to make an across-the-board ruling about steroids in baseball. Something, by the way, that nobody in the history of steroids or baseball has ever done. And that's where the issue is. The issue I have isn't with people voting. You can vote however you want. You have your opinion, you earned your vote. Turn in an empty ballot if you want. If you think it's a fun little protest, that's fine by me. That is your right as an American, that's your right as a Hall of Fame voter to vote for whomever or whomever you do not choose. My problem is, until a real decision is made about this era in baseball, nothing will get done. And the decision has to come as an organizational whole about the use of performance-enhancing drugs in baseball. It cannot be a case-by-case basis because, as we just basically proved, nobody from the 90s through the 2000s is above board on this. No single player is.
it's impossible to say that the number of home runs that Barry Bonds hit compared to the number of home runs that, say, Frank Thomas and Ken Griffey Jr. hit are clean and not clean. I don't think, as a rational person examining the situation, you can look at one human being and say, no performance-enhancing drugs were ever taken by this person, a lot were taken by this person, on the fact that neither of those people ever failed a drug test. It's just ridiculous.
I think the thing that is prolonging this, that shouldn't really be prolonging this at all, is either come out and say, like you said, as an organization, from this day forth until the end of time, the National Baseball Hall of Fame, or whatever the hall, whatever it's called, but I know it's still the Hall of Fame, but will not allow suspected PED users or known PED users and steroid users to ever be in the Hall of Fame. Either do that, or you let the process can prolong to where, okay, that tells me then that means if they don't do that, then they have some intentions of putting Bonds and Clemens in the Hall of Fame. If they never vote them in, and they never make a statement saying that no users can ever be allowed in, then they're just prolonging the process for no reason whatsoever. You either vote them in next year, or you come up with a ruling saying they'll never be in. You just don't let it slide for the next 3, 4, 5 years.
But you know that what we're talking about right now will never happen, because that means there will be nothing to discuss. And one of the biggest reasons that the Hall of Fame exists and why writers vote for these awards is because it gives them something to discuss.
Yeah, but it just... Man, if we could run parts of this Hall of Fame, I mean, things would get done like that. I mean, they'd just be done. We don't have to worry about all this excess crap. It just... And I don't get why it has to be this difficult. I don't know if they're just doing it to prolong it just so they can get paid for it or whatever, man. But come on. You're just irritating a lot more people than needs to be irritated.
I would agree with that.
And I still want to know who voted for Aaron Seeley. I just want to know. that one vote, I just want to know.
It's probably like the... It's probably like the B.J. Surhoff vote a couple of years ago. Someone said, if you ever get on the ballot, I'm going to vote for you. I guarantee you that's what it was.
It had to have been, because, I mean, this is really, I don't get that. But, you know, looking at next year's ballot, you know, it really doesn't get any easier from here. And, you know, Jack Morris will be in his last year of eligibility, and we'll have new faces on this ballot. In probably a few, in my opinion, have to be first ballot people, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't get easier from here. And the writers are just going to continue to drag their feet, clearly. And this year's election was just a waste of time. An absolute waste of time.
Right.
So.
But I also can't say that the people that are coming on the ballot next class have less suspicion just because they weren't on the witness list for the Balco hearings.
Yeah. You know,
I can't say that they have less suspicion. I don't know. You know, the problem doesn't go away because the next class comes in. Every class after this should have this same amount of suspicion, simply on the fact that they worked and played in a time when steroid use was rampant in Major League Baseball. Therefore, they are under suspicion. If we're going to play that game, we have to play it fair. If we're going to talk about fairness in baseball, and we're going to talk about purity in baseball, then everybody is either suspicious of it, and everybody has a chance that they used it, and everybody's probably a little bit dirty, or all of these people are allowed. Only issue with it.
Then you not only look at that era of baseball, but like you said, you look at the entirety of baseball, and you just have to void out everything. Literally, you have to void out everything that's happened in this game then.
Right.
And nobody wants that. Nobody wants to, you know, live in a world where Babe Ruth and, you know, guys like that aren't in the Hall of Fame. I mean, nobody wants that. But in the same regards, we're almost kind of driving ourselves to that point. At least in this kind of sense, because it's just going to be not the Hall of Fame, but a Hall of Hypocrites.
It already is, largely.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's just, it's going to get even worse. And I think this vote, as long as Bonds and Clemens are still on the ballot, this is going to be one of the most controversial ballots for the next decade.
Oh, absolutely.
So, whatever happens with that, I don't know. I can't predict the future, but we'll have to see. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what will happen with that. Because, like I said, there are people that are so set in their ways that have been voting for years. So, whether they get in, you or I don't know, but we can only, time will only tell.
Absolutely, I agree with that. On the plus side, it did help us fill out about an hour of the show.
Yeah, I told you people would take a while. So, and don't forget, please, 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 even if you don't have a PS3, even if you only get internet access at a cafe, vote for Ryan Braun. Vote hashtag MLB13 Braun. Vote for him. Get him out of seventh place at least. We don't want him in last. You know, I mean.
Yeah, that at the very least.
Yeah, I mean, come on. You don't want to see Ryan Braun last. He's a patriot, you know. He fights for his country. He soars on eagles, you know. I don't know, but. Well, guys, stay tuned for about 2 weeks from now. We'll try to get our next show in. After that, you know, we'll have Pitchers and Catchers report to talk about when we go into February, and then soon the World Baseball Classic, spring training, and then everybody's favorite time of the year, the actual season. It's coming up soon. So, thank you guys again for listening, and as always, stay tuned for the next time.
Thanks, guys.